Chapter 6 Blue Light. I grew so accustomed to the sound of the icy water that had you asked me, I should have said I walked in silence. But it was not so. And when, most suddenly, the constricted tunnel opened into a large chamber equally dark, I knew it at once from the change in the music of the stream. I took another step and then another and raised my head. There was no ragged stone now to strike it. I lifted my arms. Nothing. I grasped Terminus Est by her onyx hilt and waved her blade, still in the protection of its sheath. Nothing still. Then I did something that you, reading this record, will find foolish indeed. Though you must recall that I had been told that such guards as might be in the mine had been warned of my arrival and instructed to do me no harm. I called Thecla's name, and the echoes answered, "Thecla, Thecla, Thecla." Then silence again. I remembered that I was to have followed the water until it welled from a rock, and that I had not done so. Possibly it trickled through as many galleries here beneath the hill as it had through dells outside it. I began to wait again, feeling my way at each step for fear I might plunge over my head with the next. I had not taken five strides when I heard something, far off yet distinct, above the whispering of the now smoothly flowing water. I had not taken five more when I saw light. It was not the emerald reflection of the fabled forests of the moon, nor was it such a light as guards might carry with them. The scarlet flame of a torch, the golden radiance of a candle, or even the piercing white beam I had sometimes glimpsed by night when the flyers of the autarchs soared over the citadel. Rather, it was a luminous mist, sometimes seeming of no color, sometimes of an impure yellowish green. It was impossible to say how far it was, and it seemed to possess no shape. For a time it shimmered before my sight, and I, still following the stream, splashed toward it. Then it was joined by another. It is difficult for me to concentrate on the events of the next few minutes. Perhaps everyone holds in his subconscious certain moments of horror, as our oubliette held, in its lowest inhabited level, those clients whose minds had long ago been destroyed or transformed into consciousness no longer human. Like them, these memories shriek and lash the walls with their chains, but are seldom brought high enough to see the light. What I experienced under the hill remains with me as they remained with us. Something I endeavor to lock within the furthest recesses of my mind, but am from time to time made conscious of. Not long ago, when the Samru was still near the mouth of Gaiol, I looked over the stern rail by night. There I saw each dipping of the oars appear as a spot of phosphorescent fire, and for a moment imagined that those from under the hill had come for me at last. They are mine to command now, but I have small comfort in that. The light I had seen was joined by a second, as I have described, then the first two by a third, and the first three by a fourth. And still I went on. Soon there were too many of the lights to count. But not knowing what they were, I was actually comforted and encouraged by the sight of them, imagining each perhaps to be a spark from a torch of some kind not known to me, a torch held by one of the guards mentioned in the letter. When I had taken a dozen more steps, I saw that these flecks of light were coalescing into a pattern, and that the pattern was a dart or arrowhead pointed toward myself. Then I heard, very faintly, such a roaring as I used to hear from the tower called the Bear when the beasts were given their food. Even then, I think, I might have escaped if I had turned and fled. I did not. The roaring grew. Not quite any noise of animals, yet not the shouting of the most frenzied human mob. I saw that the flecks of light were not shapeless, as I had imagined before. Rather, each was of that figure called in art a star, having five unequal points. It was then, much too late, that I halted. By this time, the uncertain, hueless light these stars shed had increased enough for me to see as looming shadows the shapes about me. To either side were masses, whose angular sides suggested that they were works of men. It seemed I walked in the buried city. Here not collapsed under the weight of the overlaying soil, from which the miners of Saltus delved their treasures. Among these masses stood squat pillars of an ordered irregularity, such as I have sometimes noticed in ricks of firewood, from which every stick protrudes, yet goes to make the whole. These glinted softly, throwing back the corpse light of the moving stars as something less sinister, or at least more beautiful, than they had received. For a moment I wondered at these pillars. Then I looked at the star shapes again, and for the first time saw them. Have you ever toiled by night toward what seemed a cottage window and found it to be the bale fire of a great fortress? Or climbing, slipped and caught yourself and looked below and seen the fall 100 times greater than you had believed? If you have, you will have some notion of what I felt. The stars were not sparks of light, but shapes like men. Small, only because the cavern in which I stood was more vast than I had ever conceived that such a place could be. And the men, who seemed not men, being thicker of shoulder and more twisted than men, were rushing toward me. The roar I heard was the sound of their voices. I turned, and when I found I could not run through the water, mounted the bank where the dark structure stood. By that time, they were almost upon me, and some were moving wide to my right and left and cut me off from the outer world. They were terrible in a fashion I am not certain I can explain. Like apes in that they had hairy, crooked bodies, long-armed, short-legged, and thick-necked. Their teeth were like the fangs of smilodons, curved and saw-edged, extending a finger's length below their massive jaws. Yet it was not any of these things, nor the noctilucent light that clung to their fur that brought the horror I felt. It was something in their faces, perhaps in the huge, pale-irised eyes. It told me they were as human as I. As the old are imprisoned in rotting bodies, as women are locked in weak bodies that make them prey for the filthy desires of thousands, so these men were wrapped in the guise of lurid apes and knew it. As they ringed me, I could see that knowledge. And it was the worse because those eyes were the only part of them that did not glow. I gulped air to shout Thecla once more. Then I knew, and closed my lips, and drew Terminus Est. One, larger or at least bolder than the rest, advanced on me. He carried a short-hafted mace, whose shaft had once been a thigh-bone. Just out of sword reach, he threatened me with it, roaring and slapping the metal head of his weapon with a long hand. Something disturbed the water behind me, and I turned in time to see one of the glowing man-apes fording the stream. He leaped backward as I slashed at him, but the square blade tip caught him below the armpit. So fine was that blade so magnificently tempered and perfectly edged that it cut its way out through the breastbone. He fell, and the water carried his corpse away. But before the stroke went home, I had seen that he waded in the stream with distaste, and that it had slowed his movements, at least as much as it had slowed mine. Turning to keep all my attackers in view, I backed into it and began slowly to move toward the point where it ran to the outside world. I felt that if I could once reach the constricted tunnel, I would be safe. But I knew, too, that they would never permit me to do so. They gathered more thickly around me, until there must have been several hundred. The light they gave was so great that I could see that the squared masses I had glimpsed earlier were indeed buildings, apparently of the most ancient construction, built of seamless gray stone and soiled everywhere by the dung of bats. The irregular pillars were stacks of ingots in which each layer was laid across the last. From their color, I judged them to be silver. There were 100 in each stack, and surely many hundreds of stacks in the buried city. All this I saw while taking a half dozen steps. At the seventh, they came for me, 20 at least, and from all sides. There was no time for clean strokes through the neck. I swung my blade in circles, and its singing filled that underground world and echoed from the stony walls and ceiling, audible over the bellowing and the screams. One sense of time goes mad at such moments. I recall the rush of the attack and my own frantic blows. But in retrospect, everything seems to have happened in a breath. 2 and 5 and 10 were down, until the water around me was blood black in the corpse light, choked with dying and dead. But still they came. A blow on my shoulder was like the smash of a giant's fist. Terminus Est slipped out of my hand, and the weight of the bodies bore me down until I was grappling blind underwater. My enemy's fangs slashed my arm as two spikes might. But he feared drowning too much, I think, to fight as he would have otherwise. I thrust fingers into his wide nostrils and snapped his neck, though it seemed tougher than a man's. If I could have held my breath then, until I worked my way to the tunnel, I might have escaped. The man-ape seemed to have lost sight of me, and I drifted underwater some small distance downstream. But then my lungs were bursting. I lifted my face to the surface, and they were upon me. No doubt there comes a time for every man when by rights he should die. This, I have always felt, was mine. I have counted all the life I have held since as pure profit, an undeserved gift. I had no weapon, and my right arm was numbed and torn. The man-apes were bold now. That boldness gave me a moment more of life, for so many crowded forward to kill me that they obstructed one another. I kicked one in the face. A second grasped my boot. There was a flash of light, and I, moved by what instinct or inspiration I do not know, snatched at it. I held the claw. As though it gathered to itself all the corpse light and dyed it with the color of life, it streamed forth a clear azure that filled the cavern. For one heartbeat, the man-apes halted as though at the stroke of a gong. And I lifted the gem overhead. What frenzy of terror I hoped for, if I really hoped at all, I cannot say now. What happened was quite different. The man-apes neither fled shrieking nor resumed their attack. Instead, they retreated until the nearest were perhaps 3 strides off, and squatted with their faces pressed against the floor of the mine. There was silence again as there had been when I had first entered it, with no sound but the whispering of the stream. But now I could see everything. From the stacks of tarnished silver ingots, near to which I stood, to the very end where the man-apes had descended a ruined wall, appearing to my sight then like flecks of pale fire. I began to back away. The man-apes looked up at that, and their faces were the faces of human beings. When I saw them thus, I knew of the eons of struggles in the dark from which their fangs and saucer eyes and flap ears had come to be. We, so the mages say, were apes once. Happy apes in forests swallowed by deserts so long ago they have no names. Old men return to childish ways when at last the years becloud their minds. May it not be that mankind will return, as an old man does, to the decayed image of what once was, if at last the old sun dies and we are left scuffling over bones in the dark? I saw our future, one future at least, and I felt more sorrow for those who had triumphed in the dark battles than for those who had poured out their blood in that endless night. I took a step backward, as I have said, and then another, and still none of the man-apes moved to stop me. Then I remembered Terminus Est. Were I to have made my escape from the most frantic battle, I would have despised myself if I had left her behind. To walk out, unmolested, without her, was more than I could bear. I began to advance again, watching by the light of the claw for her gleaming blade. At this, the faces of those strange, twisted men seemed to brighten. And I saw by their looks that they hoped I meant to remain with them, so that the claw and its blue radiance would be theirs always. How terrible it seems now, when I set the words on paper. Yet it would not, I think, have been terrible, in fact. Bestial, though they appeared, I could see adoration on every brute face, so that I thought, as I think now, that if they are worse in many ways than we are, these people of the hidden cities beneath earth are better in others, blessed with an ugly innocence. From side to side I searched, from bank to bank, but I saw nothing, though it seemed to me that the light shone from the claw more brightly, and more brightly still, until at last each tooth of stone that hung from the ceiling of that cavernous space cast behind it a sharp-sided shadow of pitch black. At last I called out to the crouching men, "My sword! Where is my sword? Did one of you take her?" I would not have spoken to them if I had not been half frantic with the fear of losing her, but it seemed they understood. They began to mutter among themselves and to me and to make signs to me without rising to show that they would fight no more, extending their bludgeons and spears of pointed bone for me to take. Then, above the murmuring of the water and the muttering of the man-apes, I heard a new sound, and at once they fell silent. If an ogre were to eat of the very legs of the world, the grinding of his teeth would make just such a noise. The bed of the stream where I still stood trembled under me, and the water, which had been so clear, received a fine burden of silt, so that it looked as though a ribbon of smoke wound through it. From far below, I heard a step that might have been the walking of a tower on the final day, when it is said all the cities of earth will stride forth to meet the dawn of the new sun. And then another. At once the man-apes rose and, crouching low, fled toward the farther end of the gallery, silent now and swift as so many flitting bats. The light went with them, for it seemed, as I had somehow feared, that the claw had flamed for them and not for me. A third step came from underground, and with it the last gleam winked out. But at that instant, in that final gleam, I saw Terminus Est lying in the deepest water. In the dark I bent and, putting the claw back into the top of my boot, took up my sword, and in so doing I discovered that the numbness had left my arm, which now seemed as strong as it had before the fight. A fourth step sounded, and I turned and fled, groping before me with the blade. What creature it was we had called from the roots of the continent, I think I now know. But I did not know then. And I did not know whether it was the roaring of the man-apes, or the light of the claw, or some other cause that had waked it. I only knew that there was something far beneath us, before which the man-apes, with all the terror of their appearance and their numbers, scattered like sparks before a wind.